Understood is a resource I have recommended for many years to parents looking for support with learning and thinking differences such as ADHD, dyslexia, and more. And I'm subsequently excited to tell you about their podcast, Understood Explains. This season, the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Urtube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. They cover topics such as how to tell if your child needs an IEP, common myths about special education, and the difference between IEPs and 504 plans. I love how Understood Explains breaks down the overwhelm by unpacking an important topic each season and then drilling down further into key basics in each episode. Most episodes are between 10 to 15 minutes, and episodes are available in both English and Spanish. So fantastic, right? To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to the Edit Your Life podcast. I'm Christine Koh.
And I'm Asha Dornfest, and we're here to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome.
We share practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection.
And we believe that baby steps are the key to getting there.
So hi, Asha. How are you today?
I'm just fine. How are you today?
Good. We're talking at a different time of day and week, so everything's feeling different, but still awesome.
I know. It's true. I know, like, the sun is shining through my window. It's feeling great right now.
Yeah. So we are doing a cool new interview format here. And last week I had a chance to interview Dr. Ken Jeong, who is a medical doctor turned actor, producer, and writer who people may know from well-known movies such as The Hangover, Knocked Up, and Role Models. And he's also done plenty of TV, including NBC's Community, and he now has an ABC comedy series called Dr. Ken. And I personally find him hilarious in movies, but the first time I actually heard him interviewed was on the Death, Sex, and Money podcast, which I love. And I just, I found him so interesting.
Well, you know, first of all, I just think it's sort of an amazing thing that you did, that, you know, you did a celebrity interview. I mean, how amazing is that? And I think the other thing I just love is that, you know, podcast interviews, there's something about podcast interviews. And I think there's also something about you because you make people feel very comfortable. But it just brings out this human personal side of the person being interviewed. You know, I just find that it's so different than TV interviews or even radio interviews.
Well, why is that? Because I feel the same way when I've listened to interviews. I've fallen in love with certain people who I'll see all over the media, but something about, I don't know, it's something about the podcast format, or maybe just because you have more time to riff on stuff. I don't know. It's very, very cool. And I really appreciated being able to talk to him. It was really fun.
Well, I think it might just be that the people doing podcasts are regular people like you and me. And, you know, we're coming to this as, you know, person to person doing these interviews. And I think what was really sort of fun for me is this is actually my first exposure to Ken Jeong. I am not familiar with his work.
Wow. And okay. I didn't know that. Yeah.
Because I'm sometimes under a cultural rock. I haven't seen The Hangover or Knocked Up, which are movies that everybody I know has seen and loved. They're sort of still sitting on my queue. But what's so nice for me now is that I feel like I have this little personal insight into the actor. And so when I see him in these movies, I can recall this conversation. I don't know. That feels sort of special for me.
Yeah, that's actually when I went back, that's very cool. And I hope you do go and watch the movies because I actually kind of want to go back and watch The Hangover after talking to him and after having re-listened to the Death, Sex, and Money podcast. Because in that interview, he talks about sort of some inside jokes that he did sort of in a dedication to his wife in some of those scenes. And now I'm like, oh, I want to go back and see those.
Right.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. I also will say that it warrants mentioning that it was really fun to talk to Ken because we're both Koreans, we're both doctors, and we are both people who left our doctorly pursuits for creative work. And with that lens in mind, I really wanted to talk to him about making leaps. You know, change is so hard. It's so scary. And I, you know, do you have preliminary thoughts about, you know, this before we run the interview?
Oh, actually, I do. I think the thing that really struck me is that, you know, here you are having this conversation about making the leap in Ken's case from medicine to acting, which is not something most of us are going to do. I mean, let's be honest. But the fact is that the dynamics, you know, sort of the feelings involved while that change is happening and while that leap is happening, that uncertainty, that letting go of security, you know, and that scary part, but also the need to sort of trust yourself, not necessarily to succeed, but to at least try something. These are things we all experience when mm-hmm. we make a leap. I mean, if we make a leap, I think there are many that are just, it's a very scary thing. And so it's very easy to avoid and try to sort of keep those out of your life. But I don't know, somehow when you see celebrities or you see people that have had some sort of measure of public success, it's really easy to stand back and think, well, I could never be like that. Or somehow they're different. They're blessed with an easier path. Who knows what we sort of project onto those people. But hearing this conversation, it just reminds me that it's just not true. I mean, we all go through the pain of change and the fear, and it's just amazing what can happen when we, you know, when we face that, when we just live with that and do something anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's, you know, he has so many humble moments, you know, and he's not, I really appreciate that in him. So let's go ahead and listen to the interview.
As you know, I am all about micro improvements. And if you'd like to dedicate a little time each day to learn a language, I have a great solution for you. Babbel is a science-backed language learning app that offers 10-minute language lessons designed to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Materials are rooted in real-life situations, so you can learn important basics such as ordering food and asking for directions. Babbel offers personalized learning content, real-time feedback, tracking, and visualizations. And their speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent. No matter what level you are looking for, casual, intense, or something in between, you can enjoy app lessons, podcasts, and live classes from the comfort of your home on your schedule. Here's a special limited-time deal for Edit Your Life listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription. This is only for Edit Your Life listeners at babbel.com/edit. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/edit. That's spelled babbel.com/edit. Rules and restrictions may apply. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Do you struggle with boundaries and the general complexities of peopling? Relationships are necessary to our well-being, and some relationships are just, well, complicated. A good chunk of the work I have done in therapy centers on relationships. How to own my part of the story, how to let go of relationships that are toxic, and how to navigate challenging relationships in a way that doesn't drain me. And all of this work helps me show up better for myself and also as a partner, mom, friend, family member, and business owner. If you're thinking of starting therapy, check out BetterHelp. This online therapy platform was designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/edit today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/edit.
So I first heard you interviewed on the Death, Sex, and Money podcast, which I love. And I will say that so many things resonated for me. I mean, I've seen you on the screen, but that was kind of the first radio interview I'd heard. So we're both Korean, we're both doctors, and we both changed careers. Yeah, I have a PhD in neuroscience. So I just thought it would be sort of a perfect time to just chat with you a little bit about making leaps. A lot of Edit Your Life listeners are in transition and they're thinking about what's next. So that's just the context for today. But so one thing just to start us off that made me laugh out loud about that interview was hearing you say that despite your early love of acting and comedy, you were Koreaned into medicine. So I would love to hear more about your parents' roles and reactions to your career jump.
I mean, I think it was initially a traditional response to me wanting to do acting full time or having an aptitude or desire for acting when I was in college. You know, I think there was reluctance on every side, including mine too, because I was also I think what's important to keep in mind, I was also unsure as well. If I was truly confident and self-assured, you know, there was a world where I could defy my parents' orders and just pursue it anyway, you know? And I think that there was a reluctance on all sides because, and this is not an Asian thing, but it's an acting thing. I mean, show business is fickle and it's not a linear, there's not a ladder per se or a logical ladder. And so the academic side of me, you know, had a hard time reconciling that. Like here I am like getting an A in organic chemistry and, you know, knowing that that will help my chances of getting into medical school. It helps your chances of getting into a goal. And then, and something as nonlinear as acting. And I don't come from a family of artists, you know, my dad's an economist and, you know, I come from an academic background. So I definitely, there was a lot of reluctance and also, but with the cultural elements in the play of me being the firstborn son and, not being a wealthy family, like I could afford didn't come from a kind of a privileged family where mm-hmm. I could try it acting for a couple of years and, you know, daddy knows someone at the studio, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
So I didn't have any connections, didn't have any ends. And so it was a very, I look back, it was a very tough time. And now I look back, you know, many years later, you know, I don't think there was a right or wrong. And I think it just happened because it happened. I mean, it's weird how life turns out because if I didn't go through that, I wouldn't have my show, Dr. Ken, right now. So I wouldn't say I regret it even because, you know, it's like now I have a whole resource of events to draw upon as source material for my own art, you know, and basically just living my life became my art, kind of. So mm-hmm.
Your research for the role has done.
Yeah. I mean, and I never, and all this is accidental. I never thought, you know, I think I'm just living proof of just if there's a way to maintain a little bit of direction and then also go with the flow at the same time, good things can happen, you know, because you mm-hmm. don't really, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do tomorrow. I mean, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of surrender to this profession of acting. I really don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. And, mm-hmm. and it's important to be comfortable with that, you know, and
yeah, letting go is hard.
Yeah. I freely admit right now, it's always nerve wracking, you know? But having been on the other side in medicine where working 7 years in an HMO with very little growth, you know, where it plateaued after a certain while as an attending physician, it was like, okay, now what? You know, there was a bit of like, oh, this is it, you know? So I don't have that feeling, you know, of frustration that I had, I think, having a day job, you know?
And right,
I don't think I've ever said that in an interview, but that's very true. It's like, yes, I have more highs and lows, but I wouldn't trade it for the world, you know?
Yeah.
And Yeah,
I totally, totally hear you. Can you actually take us back to the official jump? Like, where would you pinpoint in time where you were in terms of your medical career and acting opportunities?
Oh, yeah, Knocked Up, the Judd Apatow movie. It was the first movie that I booked. And when I booked that movie, I still had my day job. And during a vacation week, I shot that movie and over the course of a few days. And then I think when after that happened, you know, I think my wife and I both decided it was like, well, it's time to go pro, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know? And
I will say personally, that's one of my favorites. Like I'll have it. It'll be on, you know, cable or editor, whatever. And my husband will come in and he'll be like, you're watching that again. I'm like, it's so good. You can just watch it over and over.
Yeah. It really, I mean, for me too, I mean, even if I wasn't a part of that movie, I think that's what made that so special was if I didn't know Judd, I mean, or was in any of his movies, you know, I'm a huge Judd Apatow fan and his style of comedy really resonated with me. And And it, I don't know, it was magical at that time, because basically that role was, I just lucked out and got that role. I mean, I still to this day, you know, that was winning the lottery, you know, getting that mm-hmm. role. And and it was, it basically opened the doors for everybody else in Hollywood and in comedy, saying, oh, I mean, Judd Apatow he's got Judd Apatow's like stamp of approval. It's okay to work with this guy.
And then right, that led right. to the calling card,
you know? Yeah. The basically Judd Apatow provided me a calling card saying it's okay to work with this guy. And that directly led to Role Models, one of my favorite movies I was involved with, then The Hangover, and then Community, and then Dr. Ken. So it really started that, really got the ball rolling. And it's funny, like, I'm so busy now writing, producing, and starring in my own show, it's a 24/7 job, and I forget what I did yesterday. You know, it's just so, consuming, but I remember every single minute of being knocked up, you know, you know, behind the scenes. I remember every day. I remember it's just one of those, it's those first watershed moments of your career is magical. I remember every day on The Hangover that first time I did it. It was just certain important memory, you know, certain important moments. I remember every day on Community that first day, you know, that first week I was on Community.
Yeah.
So it's pretty amazing what memories stick and what memories don't. And Knocked Up was by far the most resonant one. And
right.
It really is. I don't know. But that was now 10 years ago, and I still can't believe I was a part of that movie. Still. I mean, I still can't believe, you know, and it was that moment that led me to decide to pursue acting full time. Keep in mind, the movie had not come out. It wasn't like the movie came out, I got famous, and then I decided to quit my job. That probably would have been a more pragmatic route. But I just, there is something that kind of, you had to be there, you know, in terms of being on the set of Knocked Up. That was just a special moment. Judd allowed me to improvise. I was able to keep up with all the other stars in that movie, you know, which surprised me and Judd. And Judd basically said, you know, you are our discovery, and I will keep you in mind for further projects. And he did not disappoint. He booked me in Pineapple Express, Step Brothers, and two other movies as well. So, I mean, he literally thought of me for four or five other movies right after Knocked Up. And he just took care of me during that time.
Yeah, that's fantastic. For me. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I owe a lot to Judd.
Yeah, so I actually, speaking of, you know, you've touched on a few things that I want to get to next. And my understanding is that around the time that you were taking on The Hangover, you and your wife were in a very, very challenging place. You just mentioned to her a few minutes ago, you were new parents, you had twins, you were both doctors, and your wife had received a diagnosis of breast cancer. So I was curious about whether you feel like it was easier or harder to make, you know, your career transition and leaps, like when everything was so chaotic, meaning, did it seem like, oh, well, let's just toss another major thing on? Or do you feel like the limited bandwidth, because there was so much happening, kind of prevented you from second guessing too much so you could follow your instincts? I know that was probably a very crazy time.
You know, it was a crazy time that it's a lot of it kind of, in truth, you know, I think I blocked out because you just kind of had to do it. Well, first of all, Tran is 8 years cancer free, and she's doing great, and our kids
Amazing.
Are doing great. And she had responded to the first dose of chemotherapy in terms of her in terms of her breast cancer, and so I basically had seen a decrease in her tumor marker levels. And I think, I think medical understand the trend of the therapy that it was working. And then it was actually Tran and my mother-in-law that encouraged me to do the hangover. And it was because I was ready not to do it. And they were very much like, you've been trans responding to the chemotherapy. You know, you're taking care of the twins. Our twin girls were 1 year old at that time. And,
man.
And it was heavy. And, I mean, there was a part of me that regretted not having my day job as a doctor. I didn't have any stable form of income. And then, but mm-hmm. also, but there was a part of me that didn't regret it because I was able to take care of Tran and the kids, and I would not have had time because of the, let's say if I kept my medical day job, ironically. So because of the demands of that job, you know, I actually, in looking back, it was a blessing in disguise. I was unemployed and I had no job, you know, mm-hmm. because I had all the time and energy to devote to my family. And that was, looking back, that was a wonderful thing. And that was the most important thing ever. So, you know, I mean, now looking back 8 years later, you know, the timing of it was absolute, you know. So it was just a series of events. And I think to your point about limited bandwidth, yeah, there was a limited bandwidth where I really didn't know what was, you know, I really didn't know what was going on at that time with my own career, because I only worked on the first hangover, believe it or not, for 4 days. It was.
Oh, that's crazy.
And it's crazy. So basically the guys were in Vegas for 4 or 5 weeks and I was only there. I went in there I think once a week. And then, so I didn't hang out in Vegas with the guys. I went there, shot my scenes, and then flew back. And the studio flew me back, and I remember it being a very therapeutic moment, because even if the hangover wasn't the hangover, I was already friends with Bradley Cooper because we had worked on a movie the previous year together, and I already knew Todd Phillips before, and you know, at that time those were the only two people that really knew about trans cancer, and they were instrumental in getting me through it in terms of like. It ended up becoming cathartic, you know. I think uh-huh. I think the Mr. Chow character was just, for me, was just a tool for catharsis. And it was my idea to jump out naked of the trunk because I simply didn't care anymore. I didn't care about like what people would think. I didn't care about, I had nothing to lose. Here is my wife, you know, struggling with stage 3 breast cancer, and I don't care what people think. I'll just follow my instincts. And it makes sense in that movie artistically to jump out naked in that movie to give it a heightened sense of mystery in that first hour, because Will Ferrell did the same thing in Old School. You know, he mm-hmm. streaked naked. It was inspired by that. And it was no more, you know, because in the script, it was like, he jumps out naked. He jumps out with some slacks. And I was like, well, why not just jump out naked out of the trunk, just fully naked and heighten the mystery. And it was just like, and I ran that idea by Tran, and both of us love comedy, and that was the right thing to do. And movie history was made, but even if the movie wasn't famous, or, you know, even if none of us were famous, it just got me through a lot. And then I remember, if you look on the Blu-ray DVD of The Hangover, and it's in that desert, and I'm literally, I didn't know. I mean, I literally was another guy. I think I remember just being mad that Tran had cancer, and I just channeled that into the whatever I was saying. And it was angry and funny at the same time. And I just remember, doing like this 10-minute improv rant. They used some of it in the movie, but they just gave me a free take. And I remember everybody like applauded. And then I looked at Todd and I was like, thanks, man. That was just, I just needed that. That was therapeutic. So
yeah, that's wonderful.
When I look at The Hangover, I look at it like it got me through the worst time, you know, of our lives. And then for it to become what it was, became, you know, for that to actually like give me a career at this high level, you know, that led to me having my own show. And it's just, it's a beautiful thing. And, the way, you know, I interpret The Hangover is very, very, is a lot deeper than a lot of other people. Let me put it that way. And, it's just, I look at it as it was the gift that kept on giving, you know,
yeah.
It really was. And just so grateful for that. Just so grateful for that movie. And again, it just, I don't know. It's just, and now the older I get too, it's just, it's even that much more special. I mean, whenever I see those guys, just ran into Bradley recently, saw Justin Bartho recently, and it's just, I still keep in contact with everybody. It's just my favorite movie crew I've ever been with, you know?
That's wonderful. You know, I want to just switch gears for a second to, you had mentioned, you know, we touched briefly on, you know, your kids who were babies back then, and now what, they would be 8 or 9, something like that? They're elementary school
kids?
Yeah,
they're 9, yeah.
Yeah, and so I'm sort of curious about how your career jump experience has informed your parenting lens. Like, do your girls understand, I assume it's, you know, it's probably easy for them to understand the general categories of doctor and actor, but, you know, do they understand the nature of what you did and currently do and what a big thing that was to leap between those two things?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because Zoe does some acting and I take her to acting class and on the weekends and someone was talking about being sick and Zoe was like, oh, my dad's a doctor, sort of. Or something like that. It was really, the way she said it made me laugh. And so they knew that I used to be a doctor, and that's how I met Tran, my wife, their mother. And then they knew that I switched gears. And I talk about, you know, and I'm very open about it. And I always tell them, like, well, I chose something that my heart helped guide me to. And I said, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I want you to follow your heart and you know, whatever you choose to do. I also want you to stick with it. And also, if it doesn't work out, it's okay to fall out of love with it too, you know, but just stick with it. Stick with it. See if you really love it. See if you have an aptitude for it. And also, it's okay. There's trial and error involved too. But, you know, and so, like, for example, Alexa is on a local gymnastics team and she does a lot of regional meets now. And she's like a meta. She entered this local gymnastics competition about a month ago and she had like 4 medals. And it was just like, neither Tran nor I have a gymnastics background. I think Tran might've taken the gymnastics class like once, you know, like, but never on a gymnastics team. And that was all Alexa's initiative. And no one on either side of the family does gymnastics. So it was like, and I tell Alexa all the time, like, you're like me. You chose something outside of the box that you wanted to do that nobody else did. I'm the only actor in my family. And so I was like, you know, so I encouraged them to think for themselves outside the box, because what's outside the box for some people is completely appropriate for them. And because I'm living proof of that. So I definitely have extended that to my kids. And Zoe,
great.
She does swimming, she does acting, she guest starred on Dr. Ken. She made her debut on Dr. Ken last week as my TV son's stalker, and then an idea that I had. And it's great. You should see the episode. I can forward it to you. But it's just, I had written this with her in mind because her deadpan expression is amazing. So basically she plays Dave Stalker that turns into his girlfriend. And this week she guest stars again as his girlfriend. They're going through relationship problems. This is very fun.
That's so funny. That's really funny.
Yeah. It's really cute and funny. But also Zoe loves to swim and she's on the swimming team at school and she doesn't want to do acting full time. She really loves school and she doesn't want to miss class. And like, so the 2 weeks she was doing Dr. Ken, she wanted to get out as quickly as possible because she had school the next day and, you know, she didn't want to do any interviews because she had to do school, you know, and I'm like, that's great. Okay. No problem. So
yeah.
It was like, you know, she's just, and so we encourage that too. And It was so funny. We were just talking over the weekend, and she just said, "Oh yeah," because Dr. Ken just had her episode had aired and people had seen it, and she was like, "You want me to do more of this?" I was like, "Sweetie, only if you want to. You don't have to do any of this if you don't want to." So like, no pressure whatsoever. And
right,
you know,
it's right.
Whatever. Yeah. So I'm very sensitive about not applying pressure. And then really, you know, and my wife does an amazing job of keeping them grounded academically. You know, we just want to, you know, to me, they're just academically solid. And I like that because, you know, that was the way I was raised, and whether they go into career academics or not, just to have a foundation and a base. I mean, that keeps you, you know, a solid academic foundation can help.
That's right.
Your academic intelligence can help lead to emotional intelligence. Does that make sense? It's just like,
I agree. I absolutely agree.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not like I'm not asking them to be a microbiologist or, you know, but I just want them to be exposed to a range of situations, you know, a liberal arts kind of view of the world. You know what
right.
I mean? So I believe in that. Yeah.
Yep. So I just have two. I know we're running short on time, so I just have two quick
sure.
questions I'd love to finish up with. And the first is, in my work and conversations with people, I found that one major thing that prevents people from taking leaps is fear of disappointing people, whether it's family members or mentors. And I was wondering if you wrestle with this or have in the past. And if so, what did you do to get past it?
And my wife. I mean, oh. Yeah, I'm just like everybody else. I worry about disappointing myself, disappointing everybody around me, of course. Definitely. I'm no different than anybody else, but it was my wife that gave me the strength. She was like, because even when I was thinking about quitting my job, I was afraid to do it because I was a partner at my HMO. I was a partner. It was like being tenured as a professor. And I had a job for life. I had a six-figure income job for life. And I'm going to throw
mm-hmm.
that away to be a character actor in his late 30s. You know, it's just like, I know I'm talented, but there are a lot of talented people out there. So what makes me so special? And, you know, I definitely had a low self-esteem when it came to that. And it was my wife, Tran, that was like, if you're not going to do it now, you just worked with Judd Apatow. If you're not going to do it now, you'll never do it. Because I was
mm-hmm.
going back and forth. And Tran was like, it was really my wife's support. She was like,
"That's awesome."
She goes, "Ken," and because we had just gotten married, And we also like, I don't want you to think I'll ever hold you back. And I don't want you resenting me. We just got married. I don't want you resenting me for the rest of our marriage. If you don't take this leap, if I discourage you,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm. That's great.
So,
it's partner support is everything.
Completely. Oh gosh. It was like trans support absolves me from any guilt whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she just says, you know, and if it doesn't work, you can always go back to medicine. And even if you don't go back to medicine, we'll work it out. You know, we'll work it out.
That's great. That's
so
great.
It was all my wife. I mean, she was a missing, missing link. It really was. And then my dad,
that's awesome.
And then to my dad's point, my dad was like, he goes, "I've always said you need support of your family when you make a very important decision like this. And Tran is now your family. And if you have
mm-hmm.
her support, you have my support." So Tran had a ripple effect upon my family because they trusted
and loved
Tran.
That's so evolved. That's
Tran.
Awesome.
That's the so evolved Korean thinking. And that's my
it,
dad.
It totally
that's
is.
My dad
yeah.
talking. And ever since then, my dad's faith in me and Tran paid off. And now I go back home to my parents' home. It's a shrine of like hangover community, Dr. Ken stuff. It's crazy. Knocked up stuff.
That's amazing.
It's crazy. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Quick final question. At
sure.
the end of each show, my co-host Sasha and I share what we call your next edit. So we like to give our listeners a really actionable tip that they can take away and implement in their lives to just kind of, you know, make their lives better. So I would love to hear what your next edit is as it relates to, you know, making change in your life, making a leap, something like that. Do you have something that's top of mind?
I think right now, I think at the point in my life is to go with the flow. I mean, right now, and also, and going, but going to your, going with the flow doesn't mean to be passive. It just means, I think, to actively go with the flow. And mm-hmm. I think that's an evolved concept, but that's what that means to me.
That's hard to do, yeah. But it's good. The more we can work on that, it's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Ken, thank you so much for your time. It was such a pleasure to chat with you and, you know,
thank
make the Korean digital connection. This is so awesome.
That's great. Yes. Yes. Thank you for having me. So
and,
really appreciate
you know,
it. It was a great interview. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And listeners, I'll be linking up all your resources and links that we've talked about, the different shows, so people will know where to find you. Take care, Ken. Yes. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Did you know that hyaluronic acid naturally occurs in our skin but decreases gradually as we age, leading to thinner, drier skin? If you're looking for support hydrating your skin from the inside out, check out one of the tools in my hydration arsenal, Rituals Hyacera, which I take every morning. Rituals products are tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals, and Hyacera is clinically proven to reduce fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. They also engage in industry-leading sustainability standards and are a female-founded B Corp, which means they hold themselves accountable to not just their company's financial health, but also the health of people and our planet. Want to join me in hydrating from the inside out? Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/edit. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/edit for 25% off. People often talk about the impact of things like stress, hormone fluctuations, and nutrition on skin, but did you know those things impact your hair too? If you've been dealing with hair thinning, you are not alone, and Nutrafol is here to help. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair with less shedding. I appreciate that they offer formulas tailored to different life stages, such as postpartum and menopause, as well as different lifestyles, such as plant-based diets. In a clinical study, 86% of women reported improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol Women's Hair Growth Supplement for 6 months. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering Edit Your Life listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code EDIT. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. That's Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, and use promo code EDIT. That's Nutrafol.com using promo code EDIT.
Okay, Christine, that was a great interview. It's so obvious that the two of you had stuff in common, and that just really, I think that made this a special interview.
We had the Korean connection.
Well, which is actually, you know, we laugh about that, but I think that's actually really meaningful because, I mean, for obvious reasons. But so I just actually had a couple thoughts as I was listening to this interview. And, you know, the first is that we really, when we sort of think about those pivotal moments in life and pivotal choices, we can really only trace the storyline when we look back upon those choices. And the fact is, at the time when we're making them, it just feels like this crazy leap into the void. You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It all sounds very neat when you're looking back on it and, you know, from hopefully a place of success and say, oh, okay, well, this was the moment I made that choice. But at the time, you know, there is certainly no guarantee. And it's just amazing, really, how different that perspective is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then, you know, I had another thought, which was actually inspired by Ken's next edit when he said, actively go with the flow. I thought that was interesting, you know, to actively go with the flow, because going with the flow sort of makes you think about just sort of giving up control and letting fate take you where it will, where it will. But he said actively go with the flow. And that really points to what we talk about so often here and in our book, Minimalist Parenting. And that is that, you know, we don't have control often over where life takes us. It takes us in directions. Sometimes we certainly can't control, but sometimes we don't even expect. But when we're really honest about what's important to us, so we can stay connected to that and not just, you know, sort of take on the baggage, you know, of our history or expectations, or even what the culture is telling us to do, we can course correct. You know, we can mm-hmm. make choices about how we navigate. And sometimes that means taking a really big leap.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the big lesson in life maybe is, I just think letting go of control, it's one of the most important things, and it's also one of the hardest things. And it was so interesting to me, right at the beginning of the interview, he mentioned the concept of surrendering, which you brought up that very same term. I think it was back in our kind of advice for new parents episode.
Right.
And man, that it's so true, and it is just so hard. And I also have
so
to say,
hard.
Yeah, I love and appreciate so much how he attributes so much of his everything to his wife. That is so boss. I love it.
Oh, man. I know. It really was lovely, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I can only imagine when I think about her illness, when I think about this incredible professional leap that he made away from an extremely successful and secure career to something just out there. What journey they've been on together as a family, not to mention the fact that they had, you know, babies at the time. It's an amazing story. And I've since listened to some other, interviews that he's done, and always his wife comes up every time. You know, she's the inspiration, and she's, so anyway, it's just pretty wonderful. And I also really loved, actually really made me laugh, how he was saying that her support has influenced his parents.
I know, her, right?
That just was so sweet. I'm imagining his parents with the Judd Apatow shrine at their house. You know, like, what the heck does that thing look like? I just don't expect that's a real standard feature in most Korean homes. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah. Not so much. Not so much. I would say my parents' home was a little more traditional, you know, giant Korean furniture, screens, pottery. And no joke, enormous symbolic stones. I'm not sure what the symbolism was, but there was some symbolism that my parents literally hauled back from Korea. I will just say the airline was not happy with them.
I can only imagine. Oh, boy. I'd like to check these, please. They weigh 175 pounds each.
Exactly. Totally. Yeah. My dad would always say, oh, they told us we were overweight and oversized. Exactly how he sounded.
Oh, boy. See what I'm saying?
I know. Crazy.
All right, folks. Well, we really hope you've enjoyed today's interview. You'll find the show notes for this episode, including links to all of Ken's shows and other goodness resources we've mentioned, at edityourlifeshow.com.
And as ever, if you'd like to get in touch with us with questions, show ideas, or for episode sponsorship, drop us a line at edityourlifeshow@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play, and we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board, so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.